Blog Talk Radio.
It's a bugger when you're ugly. You're short, bald and fat. You got more chins than a Chinese phone book and hair all down your back. You look into the mirror and you hope to see Tom Cruise, but it's more like Uncle Fester staring back at you. I was lined up at the bank today. I looked up and down the queue. I'd seen better looking specimens in Taronga Zoo. If cellulite was rain, there'd never be a drought. When they were handing out the good looks, it seems we all missed out. Scabs, scars, knobbly knees, zits and saggy bits, muffin tops and stretch marks and grandma's hairy lip. Buck teeth and nasal hair all confirm the fact. Those women's magazines, they're all full of crap. It's a bugger when you're ugly. You're short, bald and fat. You got more chins than a Chinese phone book and hair all down your back. You look into the mirror and you hope to see Tom Cruise, but it's more like Uncle Fester staring back at you. Have a look at Mrs. Brown. How ugly can she get? I reckon she gets a makeup done by Monia Cement. Her eyebrows and lashes are from Helena Rubinstein. You should see her in the morning, mate. She looks more like Frankenstein. And her old man, no better. Looks like he's been beaten up. With a crooked nose, a plumber's crack, and a well-maintained beer gut. With strands of hair combed over, glued down with Vaseline. Half a dozen rotten teeth stained brown with nicotine. It's a bugger when you're ugly. You're tall, weedy and thin. You get sick, good bump in your head every time that you walk in. When you go through life with a face that looks like a twisted boot, you wonder how the hell you ever got a root. Those magazines and adverts have got a lot to answer for. They reckon we should be perfect in shape and size and form. They can shove their plastic surgery and cosmetics up their clacker. Just make the most of what you got. In the end, it doesn't matter. Well, I don't mind being ugly. I'm short, bald and fat. I got more chins than a Chinese phone book and hair all down my back. Well, I'm ugly, but I'm happy. No movie star, that's true. I'd rather be Uncle Fester than a weirdo like Tom Cruise. I'd rather be but ugly than a weirdo like Tom Cruise. Wouldn't you?
Wow, you just got to appreciate that Australian sense of humor. Oh, man. That was Earl Grey. He's a gentleman over in Australia that has done some intro work for us here on the show. And so, anyway, welcome to another edition of Kelly Outdoors. I've got right now the chat room. I'm hoping it's still up and running. I can't see because something squirreled up here on my end, and I don't know what it is. But anyway, there it is. Tonight is open mic night, which means, quick translation is, tonight is the Democratic National Convention, which I could care less about. It's also the beginning of the NFL season, and it's two teams I really don't care about, Dallas and New York, but, you know, my son's up there glued to the TV thinking I've lost my mind, that I'm not out there watching football with him, but I'm here with you guys. You know, some of the things that, since Tim was on the show last week, has come to my attention. You know, there's a lot of people out there that were really excited about him coming on the show and had a lot of positive things. And you know, the one thing I'm going to say about Tim is that there was a lot of people that were direct and blunt up front about how, you know, he's handled them in the past. And surprisingly, I mean, with generally people that are straightforward and direct like that don't get rave reviews from their fellow man. And I was, quite frankly, expecting a lot of the negative to come out, and it was quite the opposite. You know, most everybody that I've talked to and that sent me emails and stuff that had something to say about the show thought it was a great show. And I thought it was a great show. I haven't gone back and listened to it yet because it's still too fresh, you know, in my mind to how things went. And so I like to leave it, you know, for a month or so and then go back and listen to it and see what it sounds like then, because by then I've got other stuff that's kind of just drowned out, you know, my everyday normal stuff that's caused my memory to go bad. And so that's what that is. But I know that most of the comments, I would say 99% to 97%, were all positive, you know, and that's outstanding. The only time I get better ratings than that is when the show's not on the air. So, you know, it's something you have to kind of work at. So anyway, one of the things that this time of the year brings is, first of all, we have a dove season here in the state of Kansas. It started this last Saturday on the 1st of September. We've gotten actually some rain since dove season opened up, but it came down and it got soaked up so fast nobody even knew it happened. I found some water stains on my windshield the other morning when I went out to go to work, and was like, what the heck is that stuff? I hadn't seen it in so long, didn't know what it was. And literally, I'm gonna tell you guys out there, and this is where the folks from Kansas can quit bashing on me, but I'm going to tell everybody out there, unless, of course, we get literally 14 to 15 inches of rain in the next 2 months, we're not going to have a duck season here in the majority of the state. The vast majority of the state is suffering tremendously from this drought we're having, and it's not happening. And I mean that literally, 14 to 15 inches, just to kind of get us back close to normal. It's going to take a couple feet of rain to get us to normal. So it looks like we're in this nasty weather cycle for the long haul. So Kansas, more than likely, is going to be a flyover state for the ducks. And more than likely, they're going to end up down there in parts of Oklahoma where they've had quite a bit of rain, and over in Arkansas and Missouri. I guess Arkansas got a tremendous amount of rain with the remnants of Isaac. And, you know, I don't know if they were needing it, but they sure got some. And, yeah, Nathan out there saying you guys are in the same boat, southwest Missouri, you sure are. Eastern Kansas has got more water than we have, but it's just, it's still so bad it's not even funny. And I'm not sure how bad you guys are over there, but it's not good. So anyway, and a lot of people say, oh, I'll just hunt deer this year. Well, here's the downside to that. You know, animals that need water tend to not do as well when there's shortages of water. All right, just common sense. We have, like in western Kansas, the mule deer out there. The mule deer herds are down tremendously. And the stuff, the drought and stuff has affected them tremendously. They have, you know, very thin herds. We were going to go mule deer hunting this year, and my buddy out there, they own a couple, you know, bazillion acres of land, and generally they got bazillions of mule deer. And this year he said they're just far and few between, and he also told me, he said, don't bother wasting your time coming out hunting pheasants because there aren't any. I mean, the drought really takes a toll on the young birds. So I don't know if there is an upside this year in hunting to Kansas. I don't know. I mean, getting rain is not going to change the bird numbers and not going to change the birds as in pheasants and quail. But it would sure as heck help with the ducks. It would give them some place to stop. And, of course, we get some rain action going on, and that will help the deer numbers next year because the does won't be so stressed out, you know, with the weather and everything, and they'll have a good, healthy crop of fawns. But, you know, it's just these things go in cycles, and unfortunately, the only time we really appreciate the cycle is when we're in the middle of a bad one, you know, and then we look for, you know, better times down the road. And when those times get here, we don't appreciate them nearly as much sometimes because of what we, you know, we're not remembering back and, you know, oh, you should have been here in 2012 when it was as dry as a bone for, you know, going on the third straight year. So anyway, couple things. I don't know if any of you guys caught it last week on the thing, but on the show, the thing. Yeah, this is a thing, man. We are now being sponsored, and it's an in-kind sponsorship. I get to promote the program and stuff on their website, so it's not like I'm getting money. I'm not turning into one of those people. We are now being sponsored by The Refuge. We are now being sponsored by Duck Hunting Chat. And we're now being sponsored by, and have been for a long time, CallingDucks.com. Okay? I'm kind of excited about this. Those are three of the biggest websites out there, and there's a lot of other websites that support the show that we're not doing a lot of advertising on or promoting on, like THO and Custom Calls Online. I've been a member over there at Custom Calls Online for a long time, and that is probably one site where I don't put as much time in as I should. I mean, I always like to go over there and see what's going on and learn stuff and find out things. That place and THO, is, if you want to go someplace where you can find out who the newest, latest, and greatest upcoming duck callers are, or duck call makers and goose call makers and predator call makers are, those are the two sites I go to. Anytime I need a little inspiration, you know, and I want to look at some duck calls or whatever for kind of some ideas and inspiration, that's where I go, you know, just so I can see what's happening. They tend to be, you got an eclectic mix on both of those websites. You got guys that are just getting into the sport or into the hobby or into the art, whatever you want to call it. And you got guys that have been there for a long time, you know, that have been around and are willing to share, in most cases, you know, their knowledge and their abilities with those guys. And so they're both great places to go if you want to find out more about how to make calls. If you're interested in it, that'd be a good place to go. I would sincerely suggest going to Custom Calls Online and THO. .com. Both forums are great, and you learn lots of stuff. So, anyway, some other things. I don't know if I said this before or not, but I know I did, but I'm just going to bring it up since it's open mic night and my mic's not full yet. okay. I got to answer this real quick. Kelly Outdoors Radio, is one of the little things underneath the umbrella of Kelly Outdoors LLC. All right, that covers the radio show, that covers the duck calls, goose calls, whatever calls that I make with Kelly's calls, and that also covers a new entity that we picked up a little bit over 2 months ago. It's called CallerSupply.com, and it's basically a drop shipping site, and we have Buck Gardner, we have Hayes, we have Sean Mann, we have, golly, don't fail me now. Man, my brain just went on mother overload. God. Oh, my. Lynch Mob, Mac Island, Saunders, and that's it. But, we have those. There's also call parts. There's extra reeds, clucker guts, stuff like that is available there too. And, okay. Yeah, Nathan, thanks very much for that information. Waterfowltalk.com. We'll have to look into them. That is basically, you know, a company we picked up, and it was originally owned by a gentleman named Brent Derby. And he just got so tied up with things, he couldn't keep the site up. And, oh, yeah, hobo calls, thank you. Yeah, thank God, anytime. You guys can't see what's going on with the chat room, but you know, someone's taking pity on me out there. Yeah, Kent Cullum's hobo calls, he's on there. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. God, I know I'm missing somebody else, too. River Mallard. Anyway, we get a lot of stuff from a lot of different companies. We sell soundboards on there. We sell guts on there. We sell Louisiana style guts on there, bands. We don't have any of the wood and stuff like that, you know, for call making. Just have some miscellaneous stuff. But we have a great. I sent several of these things out to people, and we're gonna get away from this part of the conversation here real quick, and we're gonna introduce a gentleman right now, Craig Wilson. How the heck are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, Kelly. How about you?
Good. You just felt pity for me struggling, didn't you?
Well, yeah.
Thank you. Well, you are from the great state of California, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You're kind of a regular listener on here, and you know we have these open mic nights every now and then, and sometimes it gets people inspired and sometimes it doesn't, and the more I ramble on, it seems to either run people off or get them to come in or call in. But anyway, I was not aware of it, and my most sincere apologies to you. But you won a contest recently. You want to tell us about it?
I won the California State. And I guess, yeah, I get to go to Arkansas now and call in the world.
Okay. So you won the California State Main Street Duck Calling Championship, right? What is
yes.
it? What exactly is the title of that? I mean, seriously. I mean, I know it's called Main Street Calling.
Well, it's just California State Duck Calling Championship, and it's the Main Street is the style.
Okay. And how long have you been doing this?
4 years.
What?
I've been Main Street calling for 4 years. I've been calling ducks since I was a little kid.
Right.
So, in fact, it all kind of got started when I was 12. I was watching Wide World of Sports with my dad, and they had a little clip of the championship in Stuttgart, and I said to my dad, hey, you know what, I can do that. And he looked at me and said, son, we're from Indio. If you don't know where Indio is, Kelly, it's in the middle of the desert. He said, there's no duck callers here. Well, what is it, 44 years later, I'm doing it.
Well, how long ago did you start calling on a duck?
How long ago did I start calling ducks?
Yeah, how long ago did you start calling ducks? Did you say 44 years?
I've been calling ducks for more than 44 years, yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. I apologize.
Yeah, I'm old, Kelly.
How old are you, Craig? Seriously.
56.
Well, by God, we're kindred souls then, you know? Seriously. I'll be 56 in December, you know?
Yeah, see, I got a couple months on you.
Okay. Story of my life. Anyway. Well,
but
so,
we could really talk about River Oak Outdoors if you want on the refuge.
That would be fine.
Because
it's completely whatever you want to talk about. I mean, if you want to talk about your mother beautiful stands, we can do that, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's been a lot of fun. That's been a heck of a lot of fun lately. I've been building stands, and I don't think I've had anybody who wasn't happy with them.
Well, you probably ought to knock on wood. I know you got plenty of it laying around there because that's the kiss of death, you know.
Oh yeah, I'm waiting for someone, but you know, I try to make a good product. You know, it's an all American made product.
Well, they're beautiful. I mean, I've seen several pictures of the ones that you have on your website on display. I've seen several pictures of the ones the guys have gotten over there at the refuge and posted up. I mean, they're absolutely beautiful. What do you finish most of those things with?
Well, we're just about ready to change. I'm going to go to catalyzed lacquer here pretty soon.
Okay.
I've been using just urethane.
Right.
But I like the looks of that catalyzed lacquer a lot better. It looks a lot more like furniture.
Does it dry faster?
Oh yeah, I'll have to be spraying these. I just bought a spray unit, so I'll
Thank
be spraying
God.
Them.
I'll tell you what, me and urethane should not be allowed in the same room when duck calls are concerned, because I love the look, okay? I absolutely love the look that you get when you got about four coats on there, but I can't stand waiting. I cannot stand waiting. And I found out what Charlie Hess was using was a two-part, it's a decking material. It's called Ultra Deck, okay? And you mix it together, and you dip them, and you let them hang and whatever, and the drying time is tremendously shorter than it is for urethane.
Well, the water-based urethane stuff, Kelly, dries in 30 minutes. And it,
wow.
And it really dries in less time than that. I've been finishing the stands. They usually get 6 or 7 coats, but they're real thin, and I build them up and then polish them after that with a little wax and steel wool.
Huh. It's a water-based?
Yeah, water-based urethane.
Huh.
This is California, Kelly. We can't have any of that good stuff.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
They don't, honestly, where I'm at, you know, everybody wants to know my address, and yeah, I tell them I'm in Verdugo Village, which is the little town I live in, but truth be known, it's Los Angeles.
Right.
So, but here in Los Angeles, we can't get lacquer, we can't get urethane, you know, with the mineral spirits, and they don't even sell paint thinner here anymore.
I'm sorry. You guys out there, how long are you committed to staying there until it just falls off into the ocean? Or
Kelly, my
sell
daughter's
it in Mexico?
No, my daughter's in college right now, and she plays soccer. So I'm staying here so I can be close enough to go watch her soccer games.
Yeah.
So and once that's over, 2 more years, I'm going to be looking for a place to go. I'm thinking about going to North Dakota and be an oil rig worker.
You know what? That'd be great, except for one small thing. The cost of living there has gone off the charts. I mean, it's just absolutely insane. Before the oil started coming in, everybody and their dog was, you know, cost of living was fantastically nice. It was decent. And then all of a sudden they found oil, and the price of a one-bedroom apartment, you know, like shot up to $1,500 a month, $2,000 a month or more. I know.
Well,
that,
that's about what we pay out here, Kelly.
I was going to say, California, that may not shock you, but here, that's like jaw-dropping. I've got family out in California. They're down in the southern part, and, of course, you know, when they were here several years ago to visit, you know, they come over and they were looking at the houses and stuff, and they were going, oh, this house out there would be, you know, $500,000 home, but that house would be $1 million home. It's like, are you guys smoking something? I mean, seriously, I couldn't believe it. And you know what here, what was a $300,000 home, you know, very nice home, out there they were saying it'd be $1 million home. And then, of course, you know, when you hear about the real estate market collapsing and you see what happened out in California and Nevada and places like that where they were inflated out the wazoo, it made a lot of sense. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, we took a big hit. We took a huge hit.
Yeah. Everybody did everywhere, but I think there's certain parts of the country where it was a lot more prevalent. So.
Right.
Now, you're a cabinet maker by trade. Is that right?
Yes, sir. And it's a good thing I'm making duck calls, Stan. Because I'm sure not building any cabinets. And I'm going to just jump right in and say it. I sure hope we get a change of leadership here in this country because these last 4 years have been hell. Sorry, I don't know if I can say that on the radio.
Yeah, you can say that. I mean, if you're talking about Barack Obama, you can say anything you'd care to. I am so frustrated with this mess of stuff. I'm going to be right up front and admit it. I watched some of the Democratic National Convention yesterday. And, of course, I kept changing channels until I finally got on one that was showing the stuff before the prime time, you know. And anybody that can stand there and claim to be a Democrat and say that we are the most hate-filled people on the planet, referring to Republicans or conservatives, you people need to listen to what's going on with some of these leaders of yours. I mean, the things that they say is just reprehensible. And so tonight I was listening to some of the same crap, too, and I just, you know, again, couldn't believe it. That Richard Trumka guy that's the head of the SEIU, you know, that union, or the AFL-CIO, that guy is an absolute menace to society. I mean, literally, and I'm not saying this because I'm off the deep edge of the pool here, the boy is a card-carrying communist. Okay, I have no idea why anybody in this country would listen to somebody that believes that more government is better. I mean, I work for the federal government, and I'm telling you right now, if you want to have a fuster cluck, turn it over to a government agency to figure out how to make it happen.
Oh, well, so. And we're getting ready to do it. We're going to have the IRS handle our health care.
Oh, I know.
Wonderful.
It's going to be a nasty mess. I'll tell you what.
Well, I'll get you on politics here. One last little story here, Kelly, and I'll let you go. You know, these Democratic people here, they stand out in front of the market where I go to, and they're idiots.
Right.
I walk up, and they're got the Democratic Party and the Planned Parenthood people together. So I engage them. I walk up, and the first thing I say to them is, hey, what do you guys think about the death penalty? Oh, we're absolutely against it. You can't have the death penalty. That's horrible. Da, 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 da. So then, you know, here in California, we got these old growth oak trees. So I say, what do you think about cutting down those old growth oak trees? Oh, can't do that. Got to leave them alone. Got to do this. And I thought to myself, I'm going to ask another question. I said, well, why are you in favor of, I guess it's getting political. Somebody's not going to like me, but that's the way it is. Why are you in favor of abortion? Oh, well, it's a woman's right, and it's a this, and it's a that. And you know that most of these children that aren't aborted, they grow up to be criminals anyway, and they end up in the penitentiary. So I looked at him, and I said, oh, so you are for the death penalty. You just want to kill them before they become criminals. Idiot.
good. That's priceless. That's absolutely priceless. That's good. I got a question for you. Somebody asked on here. I think you probably saw it. Why did you get involved in Main Street duck calling so late? I mean, honestly, I mean, at your age, you don't see many guys on stage at your age competing.
Maybe I'm the oldest person in California to ever win the contest. Who knows? Like I said, I have no idea. I haven't seen anybody older than me. But like I say, I'm new to it. They could have been in front of me.
Right.
Like I said earlier, I was interested in doing this when I was 12 years old. I saw the contest on Wide World of Sports with my dad, and I knew I could do it.
With Kurt Gowdy.
Yep.
Absolutely. One of my favorite shows.
And life has its ups and downs and changes, and I got hit with a few ups and a few downs, and my life is a little bit different than it used to be. I don't have all the commitments that I used to have, so someone told me, what is it then that you really wanted to do? And I said, well, I want to call the World Duck Calling Contest. So I'm doing it.
And so how long did you practice before you finally won it? How many contests were you in before you finally won?
Well, I've blown in the state contest, I think, four times. First two times I never made it out of the first round. I squawked so loud it wasn't funny. Thank you for your money. We'll see you next year. Then I ended up with a second. Then last year I had a really horrible time, and this year was better.
And how much time do you spend practicing every day, or do you practice every day?
Oh, I don't practice quite every day, but I probably spend half hour a day when I'm practicing. Probably 6 days a week, 5-6 days a week, half hour a day.
Okay. And
I have to practice at my shop, though, Kelly, because my neighbors call the police on me.
I bet they're Democrats. Anyway.
My one neighbor, he is a Democrat, and there's no doubt about it.
Those fucking ice holes. I'm telling you, man. Anybody that calls somebody in for practicing on a duck call, you ought to throw salt in their yard and just let it go. So I'm just telling you that's all there is to it.
Nah, you know what, Kelly? I used to argue with him all the time, but I'm finding good fences make good neighbors, and we got a block wall put up between us now, and it's just better.
Yeah. I hear you. Well, did you have anybody train you or working with you, or how did you do it? Seriously?
Yeah, I have a couple people. Of course, when I decided to do this, I called Butch and said I wanted to try Main Street Calling. He goes, well, come on. He didn't know where I was now. He said, come on down to the shop on Saturday, and I give lessons, so come on down. So I said, are you going to be there this Saturday? He said, yeah. I said, I'll be there. So I got on the airplane, flew to Arkansas. That's back before things were really in the crapper. And
wow.
he spent 11 hours with me on a Saturday, getting me off the ground and giving me some pointers. He took a call, got a call for me, boarded out, and said, here, now. I mean, we spent a couple hours. He would drill and file on the tone board, blow it. Nope, not yet. Drill, file, blow it. Yep, nope, not yet. And then until he said it sounded right, and that's the way it went.
Holy cow. And what did he charge you for the time? Anything?
Nothing.
Wow.
No, I was truly amazed that that man was very, very generous with his time. And he still is. I'll call him when I have questions. And another caller that's helped me, I'll put a plug in. I belong to Callers for Christ. And Shane Rothen has helped me a lot.
Okay.
Todd,
Shane's a good
guy. Todd Copley has helped me. And Stuart Matos here in California. In fact, Stuart called me 5 days or so before this California contest, and I truly wasn't going to go. You know, they instituted a new rule. I qualified for the old-timers last year, and I was going to go, but they made up a new rule that if you call in a sanctioned contest, then you can't call in the old-timers worlds. So I didn't get to go to that last year, and I was thinking I was just going to do that this year, but Stuart called me and he goes, well, what was your goal? What did you plan on doing? I said, well, I wanted to call in the regular worlds. And he convinced me that I should go. So I did.
Well, I'm glad he did. I'm glad he made that phone call.
Oh, yeah, me too.
You know, that's awesome. Well, you know, a lot of times, you know, you hear stories about Butch, and I've heard, you know, everything across the spectrum. You know, he's a great guy, and he just, you know, he's a jerk, and you know, you hear everything. But I have had nothing but positive experiences with him. Of course, I've never asked him to help me learn how to blow a duck call any better, because that would probably turn ugly. You know, every man has limitations, you know. Man's got to know his limits.
Anybody that would call Butch a jerk, you know, just doesn't want to hear the truth about themselves.
Well, that's true. He doesn't church it up when he's talking to somebody. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, trust me. How are you going to get better if that people just whisper, that's great. That you sound good. You're right. That you don't get any better. You stay the same.
Right. That's true. You know, it's kind of like the ancient emperors of Rome. They always had somebody standing there by their side, reminding them every day that you're not a god, you're truly a mortal. You know, so just take it with a grain of salt, kind of stuff. You know, you're not all that in a bag of chips. That's today's translation. But, you know.
I can't say enough good about Butch.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your duck call stands. You know, I've got a show coming up here, and actually, I've got a show coming up September, October, November, and December. You need to send me some stuff on the internet I can print out that shows pictures of your duck call stands, and you need to send me some of your business cards if you got some extra ones laying around, and I'll be sure to do
it. I can do a business card, but now you just said the thing. I cut wood, Kelly. I can go in and I can draw up and design a nice cabinet, but it takes me 25 to 30 minutes just to log on to the show.
Okay.
The computers are not an easy thing for me to operate.
Okay, you've got a daughter that plays basketball or volleyball?
She plays soccer, yeah. She plays soccer.
Okay. Okay, there's a good possibility that you might want to enlist her help.
Okay. I do that quite frequently.
Okay. Just get some pictures, you know, some good pictures. I've seen pictures of your stuff that you posted. So who's doing those for you?
Friends on the forums. I email it to them, and then they put it up on the forum for me.
Well, I guarantee if you ask your daughter to help you out with that, you can get me some good quality pictures that I can blow up into some larger sizes and display those at the tables during the shows, you know, and you never know. A couple sales may come of it, and all it's going to cost you is a few minutes on the phone or on the computer with a camera and, you know, a small envelope full of, you know, 15 or 20 business cards or more, you know. So.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, Kelly. I'll get on it.
Okay. So, anyway, so what was Butch's reaction when he found out you flew all the way in from California?
Oh, I just think he said in that high-pitched voice when he gets excited, "You did what?" And that was it.
He probably thought you didn't have a lick of sense.
Well, like I said, he spent about 11 hours with me that day.
Uh-huh.
So, that's a lot of time.
Yeah, there's Trevor Shanahan's one that comes to mind. Hunter Grounds comes to mind. There's a lot of guys that have spent a lot of time over there learning how to blow a duck call. Kent Cullum. Kent, between Rick Dunn and Butch, Kent didn't have any choice but to blow a duck call. I don't think he could speak English as well as he can blow a duck call, to be honest with you, you know. And that's not altogether bad, considering where he lives, you know, because most people over there do speak duck, you know.
Yeah, those guys over there, they don't grow up with skateboards like they do here, Kelly. They have duck calls back there in Arkansas.
Yeah. That's
so we're at extremely disadvantage when we go back there.
Yeah. Well, that, and you kind of stand out in the crowd because you're one of the older participants, number one.
Kelly, you haven't seen me. I blend in pretty well.
Do you really?
Yeah.
You got all the camo gear and the Billy Badass.
Yeah, and I get a big hat and I wear it down over my face and nobody can really tell.
Ah, okay. You're going with the Duck Commander look, huh? You got the fuzzy face and all that stuff?
More of the John Godwin.
Okay. That's great. You know,
I can't go that bushy when someone wants me to come knock on their door and look about their cabinets, you know.
Right, I understand. You have to be able to mingle with civilized people. So, that is one character on that show that I've always thought didn't get enough credit for being just a heck of a nice guy. You know.
Well, I love the show. I watch it all the time.
You know, I hope they listen to this and hear what I've got to say. But you know, years ago I had Jace and Missy on, and then of course Willie found out that somebody was talking on a radio show, and he got on the phone and started yakking. And I've asked those guys to come back. We've talked, and it's just like, you know, ever since they went mainstream, there's a brick wall there. You got to go through so many people to get approval to come on the show that it's not even funny. And it's just...
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah, I just kind of said, you know what? You guys are way more important than I am, so I'm just going to let it go, you know.
Well, I used to buy all the Duck Commander videos, and I would call it. I don't buy them from the store. I'm just that way. I know I pay more, but I buy it from the person direct. And used to call up, and I would, Phil would answer the phone. And I would, you know, hey, Phil, I want to buy this new video. Oh, Craig, you know, it's got this and that, and wait till you see it. And this. That's what I liked about them.
Right. Not that way anymore. Try calling there now, and you get put on hold, and you get to talk to somebody else, and they need to talk to you about what it is you need to talk to them about, and then they take your information, and then if you're lucky, somebody will call you back, you know. I don't know. I'm just kind of – I think the Robertsons are – they haven't changed. I just think the people that are managing their public persona have kind of – cramped them up or gummed them up. I know, reading between the lines and talking to them before the show started on the air, they were absolutely not happy about the fact they had cameras in their faces 24/7 for weeks at a time. And they were not happy about going and continuing on.
Well,
I mean, I know they got some big-time endorsements.
Well, I'm pretty sure they're not, Kelly, but, I mean, they're probably getting some ridiculous amounts of money shoved at them, and it's kind of hard to turn that down.
Well, yeah, I'm sure.
So I'm pretty sure if you got to hear Phil speak, that his presentation probably hasn't changed a bit.
Well, that's kind of interesting, too. There was a deal up in up in Great Bend this last year, and it was a waterfowlers thing up there for Great Bend, and the promoter was trying to get him to come, and nope. First, his agents had said yes, and then I guess his wife said, no, you're not going anywhere in July, period, the end. She put the kibosh on it, and that was the end of that. And it was kind of devastating because he was really wanting to be there. I mean, I have no doubt that they're doing well financially. I have no doubt whatsoever. But I just think that with fame and fortune comes a lot of responsibility to the people that put you there, number one, and number two, to your families to kind of keep a balance on things. And I hope they keep a balance, you know. But it's a sad state of affairs if people they've talked to in the past and yacked with and been friends with in the past can't get 5 seconds alone to talk to them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand. But like I say, until I walk in his shoes, I can't say anything, you know, derogatory.
Yeah.
I like him. I like what he stands for. I'm sorry to hear some of these things that you're telling me, but... I mean, I always picture Phil coming out and just saying, okay, you guys came to hear me speak, and now you're going to hear what I have to say. And he'll open up the Bible and read some scripture. This is what I got to say first.
Right.
I mean,
well, I'm not saying anything derogatory about him, Craig. Don't misunderstand. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that there has to be a fine balance there between the business and between your family and your personal life. And the business part is, you know, taking care of the people that helped get you where you were or where you are. And taking care of the family by not letting the business side of it ruin your perspective of what's going on with the family. You know, if you start chasing that dollar, those folks back home are going to forget about you. And I don't think that's happening. But I'm just saying that it's kind of a sad state of affairs when I call there and I ask to talk to Jason. and I have to talk to 14 different people before I can even think about getting his final, you know, the final person, and then it's just like, okay, I'll take your information, they'll call you back, or someone will call you back, and then I never hear anything back. It's just kind of,
right.
It's kind of aggravating, but hey, you
well,
know, whatever.
I can understand that.
I'm just,
I understand.
I'm nobody. I'm not, you know, I'm not, it's not like Vice President Joe Biden's calling to talk to you about your duck calls.
Well, if he called me, I'm sure I would put him on hold and never get it in.
I heard somebody the other night on one of the talk shows, they called Joe Biden the brain trust of the DNC.
You know what? I always thought DNC was another term for an abortion.
It should be.
Well, I think it is, but I don't think it's the N. It's D and C.
Right, right, right. D and, as in and. So.
Right.
Anyway. Well, so when is Stuttgart coming up? When is that?
First Saturday after Thanksgiving.
Well, you got to sell a few of those little flipping duck things to get your fanny over there, don't you?
Well, the nice thing is there was a little bit of prize money, Kelly, and it should take care of my airline ticket. So the biggest deal is I'm trying to figure out where in the world am I going to stay, because everything in Stuttgart's booked.
Well, you don't stay in Stuttgart. You find someplace close to Stuttgart.
Yeah, somebody told me Brinkley. So
Franklin, Tennessee?
No, Brinkley, Arkansas.
Oh. I was going to say Franklin, Tennessee. That's kind of a long haul.
Well, you know, I have been back there once, Kelly. Actually, I've been back to Arkansas more than once. I called in three of the regionals back there a year or so ago, and in 2009 I went back and tried that last chance regional.
Right. Hey, one of the guys on there, Indiana Duck, suggested you sleep in your car.
Well, I'm flying in the airplane. I guess if I rent a car, I got to sleep in that. I think it might be cold there in November, too.
Well,
boy, I sure hope so.
It can be. We were over in Tennessee for Real Foot, okay, which is just real close to that same time frame, okay? And, oh, my God, it was like 90 degrees. It was the warmest weather they've had in a long time. It can go from extremely hot to extremely cold, sunshine to crappy to, you know, ducks hate that kind of stuff, you know. They'll leave. So you never know. I mean, you got to pack for fairly light weather. Where you're from, you guys don't ever get really serious cold stuff, so... You know, you're definitely going to need to take some stuff to where you can be warm enough, you know, in layers. You know, you don't want to look like the guy from California wearing a parka, okay?
So. No,
Nathan said last year was really hot, you know.
I thought it was raining there last year.
It can be hot and rain.
Okay, well, it does that in California, that's for sure. Rain here today, and it's hot.
Okay, I don't need to hear about how much rain you're getting in California, all right? You got a guy that's sitting here in the middle of the big dry, the big hole, the big suck hole. So
sorry, Kelly. Yeah,
I know you're not responsible for it.
I'm praying for rain for you.
Well, I'll take all the help we can get. Lord knows.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Well, seriously though, talk to your teenage daughter about helping you get some pictures of that stuff. You know, you got some of the ones already made there that are ready to be taken pictures of.
You know, I make them as I get orders, Kelly. I don't make them in advance, but I could probably make up some and take some pictures.
Well, you know what? Here's a better idea. I will. You know what? Don't even worry about this, Craig. I'll take care of this all for you. I'm just going to post it up on the Refuge, and I need pictures of your work so I can take some examples of pictures of your work to a show. All right?
That'd be great. You know, Todd Coakley and Buck Gardner have call stands that I didn't ever get pictures of, and I sure wish they'd send some. They promised.
Well, you probably ought to send Buck a reminder and say, hey, you know, while you're getting those stainless steel duck call bands together for Kelly that he's waiting on, could you mind taking a few pictures of that duck call stand of mine and sending it to him?
I'll do that. Yeah, he got one made out of I made one for him out of Babinga.
Really?
That's cool.
Matter of fact, how prophetic. The call that I'm waiting on the stainless steel band for, which is going to a gentleman in the former Soviet Union, needs a stainless steel band. It's also made out of Babinga.
Hey, I really like the wood. It was a lot of fun. Not cheap, because I don't use little billets of wood. I think a duck call stand takes about 8 board feet.
Holy snikes.
Yeah, I know, and I've been keeping the prices low, but that Babinga, it was like, I think I paid almost $20 a board foot.
It's not cheap stuff.
No.
Not cheap stuff. Now, but you're using a lot more of it than I am.
Yeah.
So, anyway, what other kinds of wood do you like to use?
If I'm building stuff for myself, I really like cherry. Most of the stuff I do online is red oak, and then I have a couple, three different stains, just trying to keep the cost down.
Right.
Because red oak, I'm still paying $3 a board foot for that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, getting into the cherries, and I'm you know, $7.50 to $8 a board foot. The walnut is right up there. So.
Well, you get a lot of, what are you using the California walnut? What's it called? Doggone it. There's nothing more sad than two old guys having a conversation. They can't remember half of what they're talking about.
Could you speak up, Kelly? I can't hear you.
I said, what kind of walnut is you guys
giving
have
giving you a
there?
Hard time, old guys, you know.
Oh, okay. That was funny. No, what kind of walnut is you guys have out there in California?
Actually, I'm using a walnut that comes from the East Coast because it gets a lot darker.
Okay.
The walnut we have out here is kind of got a lot of sap in it and blonde streaks.
Right. Well, what's the name of it, though? It's not just walnut. It's something walnut. It starts with a C.
Claro walnut?
Yeah.
I'm not using Claro walnut.
Okay. That makes some beautiful duck calls. I mean, black walnut makes some beautiful duck calls, too. If you get the stuff that's got, you know, kind of the transition state between the sapwood and the heartwood, that's my favorite. And the crotch areas of black walnut. And you get, you probably know what the scientific name for it is, but when you're sanding it down and you finally get a finish on it, it almost has a holographic type of
Look. It's just the depth and the grain that you can see.
Right. But there's actually a name for it, translucency or something like that. Anyway, I remember my first duck call that I made out of black walnut, and I ended up putting just a clear lacquer finish on it, put a little bit of mineral oil on it to get the grain to pop, and sanded it down and filled all the little sucker holes in them, as I like to call them. And then I sprayed it with the lacquer, and it was like, holy crap, look at this. And I'd never seen how I'd do that before. So it was really kind of cool. I mean, I love turning black walnut. I really do. And it's a classic duck call wood, you know.
Well, that, and I love the smell of walnut when you're turning it or cutting it.
Oh, yeah.
It's just got a really good, clean smell.
Well, it's just like, cherry, you know, wild cherry.
Yeah.
I've never understood why people think that cherry is not red, okay? They always seem to think that it's red, and I have to explain to them, it'll turn that color eventually, you know, but when it's new, it won't, you know, be that color.
Yeah, it's kind of a greenish pink, but, you know, you put that out in the sun, and the cherry blisters or sunburns real fast.
Yeah.
I have some in the shop right now that I just got the beginning of the week, and sitting close to the door, and as I was pulling it off, it was nice and dark, and then I could see where it hadn't gotten any sunlight, and then there you go. It wasn't the same.
Yeah. Well, Osage Orange, have you ever worked with it?
No, I haven't.
Okay. That's a pretty cool wood, and it does the same thing. I made a couple calls for a display case at a store, and I had some calls in there, and they were selling them and stuff, and everything was fine, and I went to go get those and put new ones in there and take the old ones out. And I'm looking around, what are these? And I'm looking at it, I flip over the tag and I read it, Osage Orange Goose Call, short read Goose Call. That thing was, I mean, candy apple red, okay? And it had turned that color because of the lighting inside this cabinet. It was really kind of cool. But, you know, I can't afford to have calls sitting around for a year and a half waiting for them to turn the color. You know?
Oh, I understand. I'm looking for some green hedge myself, Kelly.
You want green hedge? I mean, as in?
As in the real stuff.
Oh, boy. I'm going to tell you right now, there's darn few people that have any of the real stuff. Okay?
Yeah, I talked to my lumber suppliers out here, and they looked at me like I was speaking a foreign language.
Oh, yeah. The only way that stuff comes about in the real world, okay, is a hedge fence post, generally a corner post, that's been planted in a low-lying area where it's got a lot of water, that's got a lot of iron in the soil, that has a great naturally occurring staining solution in it, made up of hulls of black walnuts and the shells of black walnuts. It actually causes the water to acidify, and the iron in the water and the soil leach into the post, and it takes dozens and dozens and dozens of years to get that effect. Okay.
Well, I got a buddy. Maybe you can help me with this. He's in Indiana, and he says he's got a bunch of old posts that a farmer of his said they've been in the ground over 100 years that he could have if he wanted them.
Well,
how do we know where hedge grows?
Well, that's just it. The only way to find out is to fire up a chainsaw and cut it off near the bottom. Don't even mess with the top. And what you're going to find most of the time is that once you cut that bottom open, that crusty black layer of snot on the outside of there that's all dried and stuff, you're going to see sparks flying off your chainsaw blade. You'll cut through it. You won't cut through it too many times for the chainsaw blade's history. And then it'll be kind of a dark yellow on the inside. It'll be an aged yellow on the inside. And it'll have that green color really close to the outside of it if it's been in the right conditions. Okay? The problem is that a lot of times those posts, where they were down at the bottom like that, the water would leach up through the bottom and into the sides and stuff, and there are certain wood-boring critters that would get up in there, like ants, for example, and they'd start hollowing those things out. So you'll end up with a big hollow spot in there a lot of times. And you'll end up, you know, like a big hole in the middle of that post coming up, you know, anywhere from 4 inches up to 20 inches up, you know. So there's only one way to find out is have your buddy cut some of the bigger corner posts and see what he can get. I mean, I've got a whole stack of them out here beside the house that I use the smaller pieces for, like whistles and stuff like that, you know, when I want to. If I'm in the urge, if I got the mood to go out and ruin a bucket of chainsaw blades, that's what I'll do.
Right.
I'm telling you what, when you're cutting it, you literally will see sparks fly off. The guy's in Indiana, right?
Right, he's in Indiana.
Whereabouts in Indiana?
Oh, gosh, now I got to look for his address on my computer.
Okay. Well,
Fort Wayne.
Fort Wayne. Well, one of the guys on the forum, or on the chat room, Indiana Duck, he's from Indiana. But, yeah, if your guy's got some, have him cut it off about a foot above the bottom and see what it is. But anyway, this guy's sister lives there. Maybe you guys can get a hold of each other. You want to give out your phone number in case he wants to call you?
My phone number is, it's just the same one on the forum, so it's no big deal. 818-269-6833.
Okay. There you go. Maybe he can get a hold of you. All right.
Okay.
Well, I was going to tell you, a lot of the green hedge, and it's only because the stuff's been, you know, raided and plundered and looted, there's not very much of it still out there in the real world. I know that you can get green hedge calls from Rick Dunn at Echo and some other companies, and basically their green hedge is created by taking blocks of wood and cut down to size and then put in barrels, 55-gallon drums filled up with a solution that's got a lot of iron in it, fertilizer-type stuff. And it's just let to sit for 4 to 5 years at a time. And they go out there and, you know, they'll shake the barrels every now and then, just kind of get them, you know, moving a little bit, and they'll leave it. And it takes about 5 years for that stuff to penetrate all the way to the center on a, you know, 1.5 or 1¾ by 1¾-inch block. You know, so it's unfortunate that it's come to that, but that's what it is, you know. There's faster ways of staining them and getting that effect. To be honest with you, putting them in a pressure situation to where you're applying pressure like they do for stabilized wood, it'll get it done too, you know. But it's not the real deal. The real deal, I mean, the difference between the real thing and that stuff is like night and day. I mean, you can tell. It's like night and day.
See, I haven't had the good luck to see much of it. I just know I'd sure like some.
I've got some blocks that Wayne Betts sent me, and you can tell they're from the post because they're still post on the outside. They're from the outside skin of the post. That's where you get it. You don't get those perfectly 2x2 or 1.5 and 1.5 blocks from from a fence post. Those are cut from standing wood, you know, from live wood that's been cut down and stuff.
Right.
The stuff that Wayne sent me, I mean, it's actually, you got the old crusty fence post site on the outside of it, and it's the real deal. And
well, then, yeah, you know for sure then you got that.
Right, right. And I would not even know what something like that is worth, you know. He sent it to me out of pity because I said something nice about his duck calls one time and he felt sorry.
Well, I got somebody who said they'd turn me a duck call out of it if I could get it. So
yeah.
I'm trying to get it.
Well, have your buddy in Indiana cut some of it open and see what it looks like.
Yeah, you know? he did, but he cut the wrong spot. He cut right at the top of it, and it was the top of the post was just pretty much rotten. And
yeah.
I didn't think
there
was anything to salvage out of it.
No, you got to go down about a foot above the bottom, and you cut it there, and you look at what's left, and you see if you want to cut above it some more. And, you know, if you got enough there on the sides, and that's why you got to use the corner post, because the corner posts are bigger, okay?
Gotcha.
The corner posts are darn near twice as big as the regular standing line post, because those things are planted deeper, and they're probably a good 10 to 12 inches in diameter, okay? That's why the corner posts are the ones you want, because the regular ones can be those little scrawny 5 or 6 inches, you know, and those things, when the bugs get to them, there's not going to be a lot of good wood there. I mean, you can get some good green stuff for whistles or, you know, like a wood duck call or something, but anything bigger, I mean, you could probably get an insert out of some of it, but as far as a barrel, it's kind of touch and go, you know. So that's why they go with the corner post. And once people back in the day, when they started finding out everybody wanted a green duck call, crime instantly crossed. There was people running all over Arkansas and Louisiana with trucks, with rigs on them, pulling farmers' fence out of the ground and stealing their corner posts. It was kind of an epidemic, you know.
Pulling everybody's fences out, huh?
Seriously, I'm not kidding you. I am not kidding you. There was parts of Arkansas and Louisiana that were denuded of barbed wire fences by duck call makers. Of course, they didn't have anything to do with it. They had the wood suppliers that were doing that, so they could kind of stand back. So that wasn't me. You know?
Yeah, I just, you know, I don't know where he got it. I just bought it from him.
Yeah, it's kind of like the old boy that loans his truck to his nephew that's running moonshine. Well, I wasn't involved in that. He stole my truck. I leave the keys out there in the shop. He took my truck. Yeah. I didn't know he took my truck.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if the guest doesn't get caught, then he gets, you know, 25% of the profit for the truck.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, we're getting
there's got to be somebody else out there, Kelly, to call in way more interesting than me.
Nah, it was good. I'm glad you called in. I've been wanting you to call in for a long time, but you didn't want to. You know,
well,
how long
I never
you've been
have
on the
it.
Air?
No.
It's like 2 minutes left in the show, dude.
Oh, well, that went by quick.
It did. See, you got some bad skills as a host or as a guest. So anyway.
I guess.
Well, we got
well,
a couple minutes.
Well, you know,
left.
I just never figured I had much of anything important to say. So.
Well, you're wrong. You got, you know, you've lived 56 years. You get probably a whole lot more need to say than what you said on here. You know, what is your favorite duck to hunt?
Well, obviously, it's greenhead is my favorite duck to hunt. But where I'm at, we just don't have many.
What kind of duck do you have to hunt then?
I shoot a lot of gadwalls.
Good. Gadwall's a good duck. Darn fine.
Oh,
duck.
I like them. I get the guys on the California forum tell me, oh, you're shooting trash ducks and da 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 whatever. You know, give me all your trash ducks because I'll cook them for you and you won't know the difference.
No. No, that sort of elitism, there's no place for it, you know, in this sport. There really isn't, you know. What about goose hunting? Do you do very much of that?
You know, Kelly, I did. I did a whole lot of Canada goose hunting back when the tube call was big. I can't blow one of those short-reach goose calls, but I can sure blow a tube call. But I had a lease down on the Colorado River in Arizona, and to be honest with you, I got sick of it. I would go and sit in that same hole, and the limit was two, and I'd shoot my two geese, and they'd fall in the same 30-yard circle every day I went, you know, and my dog goes out. He didn't even, you know, he wouldn't even look. He just ran to where they would fall. So I was ruining a good dog, and I said, I've had enough, and I quit, and I went back to duck hunting.
Huh. Well, some guys would have considered that the ideal setup.
You know, it was great, but, I mean, you do that 3 or 4 years in a row, and it just gets old.
Well, you got to try mixing it up a little bit. Try not calling so good. Try blowing them out of the hole with a call. See if those geese will overcome your shortcomings.
I don't know, Kelly. I was married at the time, took my wife down there, and she was killing geese with sixes. Took another buddy down, and I've got that on video. He was killing them with 410.
Wow. That I wouldn't do. I mean, it would sound challenging, but I definitely want to have somebody there with a 12 gauge as a backup.
Oh no. There were backups, but let me tell you, the two he killed that day broke both wings when he hit. I mean, he's shooting them at 10 yards. I mean, they're right there.
Right.
So wasn't an issue. Those birds fell dead.
Good. Yeah, if they're in at 10 yards, I mean, if you can't hit them with a 410, then you don't need to be shooting.
Right. So. No, it was fun. But then, like I said, it's the same old thing. Yeah, I'm going to go down and shoot some honkers, and, yeah, big deal. I like shooting specs, though. That's fun now.
Well, I'll tell you what, specs are a lot of fun. They get a lot of credit for being smarter than Canada geese. I'm not sure if they are. I think they just got to be in the right mood.
You know, Kelly, I think it's just because pressure's been put on them. Back when I was shooting specs up at Tule Lake, they were the easiest things in the world to call in.
Huh.
Just
well,
get
you
on,
know.
on a little Lohmann squealer, and,
uh-huh.
and they were, boom, right in your face, landing in the decoys.
Yeah.
I guess it's different now.
Well, you remember, I know you know this, because when we were kids, you'd look at the Outdoor Life or Field and Stream or Sports of Field, or every now and then there'd be a show on TV, American Sportsman or something, where they'd be hunting rags for snow geese down in Texas in the rice fields, okay? And they'd have all these things out there. Man, I thought, oh, that's sweet, you know, because we never had enough goose decoys when I was a kid. You know, we only had duck decoys. We had some goose decoys, and most of those were ones that we actually probably found, you know, along the way. But I saw that. I thought, man, wouldn't that be nice? And then, of course, my dad told me we don't have any snow geese here in Kansas, so, you know, quit collecting all those doggone things. I would go to yard sales and stuff and buy all their white bed linens and stuff, you know, that were in garage sales for 10, 15 cents a piece, whatever, back when I was a kid, and cut them up into 2x2 squares. And Dad would just let me spend my lawn mowing money on stupid stuff like that. And he said, what do you plan on doing with those? I said, snow goose decoys. And I told him about the show and stuff that I'd seen, and I showed him the article on TV, and he said, well, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good idea. He said, only problem I see with that is we don't have any snow geese here. Why not?
Well, I've got to tell you, Kelly, I'm old enough to know, you know, windsock decoys, big deal.
Yeah.
Well, when I started hunting snow geese, there were no windsock decoys. We used to take white trash bags and stick them
yep.
on dowels.
Well, we didn't have white trash bags, okay? What we had was rags, okay? Just cotton rags. And then I saw in another article, these little boys were using paper plates. And I'm going to tell you what right now. Paper plates were a whole lot easier to pick up at the end of the day than 400 rain-soaked cotton sheets, okay? Oh, man, you talk about trudging. Trudging.
Well, let me tell you, Kelly, you better pick up those paper plates.
Oh, we did.
I hunted when I was younger. I used to hunt a place called Worcester, and they had the Union Track, and it was a minimum. You had to have a dozen goose decoys if you were going to hunt. Well, you know, luck I had it. It was hanging, and I was up, and I didn't have any goose decoys, but I had paper plates. And we went out and threw a bunch of paper plates out, and the game warden came up behind me and goes, those are not decoys. I said, yes, sir, they are. Trust me, they'll work. He came back to the field when I was leaving and walked through the field and made sure I did not leave one paper plate because he was going to cite me for littering.
Did you get birds?
Oh, yeah. We shot four limits.
Holy cow. Well, I'm here to tell you that we never got a single snow goose or subspecies or blue goose or whatever you want to call them in on those things. I mean, and my dad did it to humor me, you know, okay, put them out. Of course, he wasn't putting them out. It was me and my brother. And all right, put them out. Let's see what happens. And nothing happened, of course. I mean, truth of the matter is we had some ducks buzzes, and I think they were just bored. You know, so what are we going to do today? I don't know. What are you going to do today? I don't know. What do you want to do today? Let's go fly over those racks, you know, kind of a deal.
Pretty visible. I killed a lot of specs over snow spreads.
Well, you know, it's like I thought that was the coolest thing in the world because you see those guys down in Texas doing it, and then of course they came out with the socks, And of course, then, you know, guys like me are thinking, well, how can you do that? And then somebody came out with trash bags, the white trash bags, and somebody found some gray trash bags, looked a lot like Specs, okay? And then that's when the silo sock guys started going, hey, you know, there's something to this, you know? I don't know. I love hunting geese. I love hunting ducks. If I had to choose, and I can only do one, it'd probably be geese. Because, I mean, you get up later in the day, and you don't have to be out there that, you know, 3 hours before the crack of dawn. And there's a lot to be said for, you know, missing that crack of dawn thing. You know?
Well, I guess when I get a little older, I might go back.
Yeah.
But right now, I like getting up, and I like being waist deep in the water and not hunting in a duck blind, hunting in the actual marsh. For now, I like it.
Well, that's cool. That would be good. You take your dog with you?
Oh, yeah, Kelly, that's a whole other story. I built him a stand. I made that out of mahogany. But anyway,
oh,
I have the skinniest lab you've ever wanted to see, Kelly, and he weighs 119 pounds.
Big dog. Is he come from waterfowling stock, or does he come from, pointing lab?
Comes out of Champion Lines. He's a hunting dog.
Huh. I had my male buddy that we lost a couple years ago. He came out of pointing stock, and he was a field trial champion in pointing labs, and he was a big dog. I mean, he was between 100 and 120 pounds, depending upon what he'd eaten that day. You know, Mexican roofer or just dog food, it varied. And he was a big dog, and I was a little leery of him with his water skills because of his, you know, his field trial stuff with the pointing and stuff, but. Well, he took to it like a duck. He really did. He had no problems with it. The biggest problem he had was the fact that early on in his youth, he had a goose pop him really good in a field hunt. And I can honestly say that from that time on, Buddy never brought back a live bird to hand again.
I used to hunt with the Springer, and he had a goose pop him once.
Yeah.
And that dog, and he was a small Springer. He jumped up on top of that goose and pinned it down, and every time the goose moved, he'd growl and bare his teeth, and he held that bird there until I walked the, you know, 50 yards or wherever it was to go get the goose. He couldn't bring it back, but it wasn't getting away.
Very good. That's cool. You got a ninja Springer there. That's a special breed. You don't see any of that.
You know what? I miss that dog dearly. He's probably the best dog I've ever had.
We had a Springer named Berkeley that was kind of one of those strays that showed up at my wife's office, and she brought him home, and we cleaned him up and got his hair cut and gave him a new name. We couldn't find the owners. After 3 months, we gave him a new name, and just for grins and giggles, I took him out pheasant hunting with me one time, and holy crap. That dog, I don't know if he'd ever seen a pheasant before in his life, but he absolutely thoroughly enjoyed it. And the only time that dog ever gave me any grief was after I missed like 4 or 5 birds. He would literally go back to the truck. I'm done. You can't hit anything. I'm done. And I'm not kidding. He would. He would.
Quit wasting my time.
Yeah. We could hunt all day long if we weren't seeing birds. He would be out there going around trying to find them or whatever. But if we started getting birds up, and if I missed 4 or 5 birds, he would, I'm not kidding you, it could be 5 miles away, he would turn around and walk back to the truck, and I'd be freaked out. Goes, where's the dog at? We get back to the truck, he's laying there, like, you idiot, I'm done. You can't shoot any better than that. I'm not doing this. But no, Buddy, I'll tell you what, he got popped by that goose that one time, and man, he got that goose down and grabbed it by its neck and just crunched it. That was the end of that. And so from that point on, if he picked up a bird, I don't care if it was a goose, a duck, or a pheasant, if it had any life in it at all, he grabbed it by the head and the neck and he crunched it, and he brought it back. Because he was never going to get cocked again. But
smart dogs.
I mean,
it's amazing what they do when they're doing things they were bred to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. And it's always fun to be there and experience it. You know, so. Anyway, Craig, we actually ran over. You got on the air just about 10 minutes into the show, and it's now 9 minutes after the hour. So you've been on the show for about a whole hour.
Oh, boy. Well, there we go.
Hey.
Well, thanks for letting me call in, Kelly. It was a good time.
No problem. I'm going to post that. I'm going to post that stuff on the Refuge here in the next day or so for people to submit photos. And,
okay, great.
We'll see if we can't get that taken care of for you. Okay, bud?
I appreciate it, Kelly. Thanks very much.
All right, thank you. Have a good evening, man.
You too. Bye.
Thank you. All right, that was Craig Wilson. 269-6833, 818-269-6833. That's his number. Excuse me. He makes some of the most amazing duck call stands for collectors that you've ever seen. And, I mean, he makes them from fairly inexpensive wood all the way up to very expensive wood. And it's just whatever you want, the man can make it for you. I mean, he's an experienced cabinet maker. He's been doing that for years. When the housing industry ran into a windstorm of crap out there, and it went down the crapper, his cabinet building days kind of slowed down, so he started doing other things. He makes duck call stands, and there's other things he makes, I'm sure, that I'm just not aware of. But he's got some skills. I've seen pictures of his stuff, and it's awesome. If you want to see more of his work, you can actually go to The Refuge and click on the forums page and go to the duck and goose calling page and go down there, and it's Oak River is the name of it, or River Oak. Oak River, River Oak, one or the other, and duck call stands, and click on that. That'll take you to his website, and I'm thinking there's plenty of pictures on there about his stuff on there. And he makes some absolutely beautiful furniture. I wouldn't call it a duck call stand. I'd call it furniture. It's that kind of quality, okay? So, anyway, glad he called in tonight. He thought he wouldn't have more than 5 minutes worth of stuff to talk about. Go figure. There you go. Anyway, thanks a lot, guys, for calling in, or Craig for calling in. Thanks a lot for listening in. And I hope the rest of your week goes awesome, okay? Again, thanks, everybody, for your comments, your emails and stuff about last week's show. I appreciate it. If you guys got any suggestions for guests to come on, by all means, feel free to give me a call or send me a message or send me an email or something. There's all kinds of ways of getting a hold of me. If you want to, it's out there. You can find it. All right. Talk to you later. Have a great evening.